Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hi, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast. I think my name is out there enough, but I like the new people to know. What is she, two people? No, same person. Anyways, wait till you hear this guest I have today. You guys are going to be so excited. I know I am. Can you tell? But anyways, I want to let everybody know I'm starting the magazine this afternoon. It's a pretty big issue. And, you know, I always wait until 2 days before, and I thought, no, don't be so silly. This is so much information and links and all of that, as everybody knows. So if you have anything you want to submit, I'll take excerpts, poetry, articles. I mean, and it doesn't have to be metaphysical. It can. I mean, I have somebody that submitted something about golfing, about moms. I mean, really, I can cover it all. I mean, it's just everything. And be sure to include an image, and you send it to Stars with a Z. C-A-S-T, like in Tom, at mysticlivingtoday.com. And, you know, if I don't accept it, which is very rare, I don't think, like I said last week, I don't think I've ever not accepted something that somebody has submitted, because for the most part, I always think that we're protected when we do things like this. Like, nothing really bad is going to come my way. That's how I feel. And it never does. It's always beautiful work, beautiful pictures, all that kind of stuff. And once you submit for the magazine, oh, well, you're hooked, and I've got you, and I'll send you a reminder every month. And that's how it's gotten so big. And, of course, I have the publicists that are wonderful. So, okay, back to Stars with a Z, psychics.com. For first-time clients, we have 10 minutes for $10. There's 15 minutes for $15 and 25 minutes for $25. One time only, new clients only. I had free minutes before, but, you know, to do free minutes, it doesn't really work out. It's not cost effective. And believe it or not, I've gotten a lot of new ones to sign up. I love to see new people, but I love to see those that have been with me for 10 and a half years and even longer, when I just had Planet Stars over on America Online and the MSN community. Many of them have followed and have stayed 20-some years. Can you imagine that? Because Planet Stars was started in 1998. So I've got a long-time career, and I guess this is my calling, that, like this lady that I'm going to introduce. This is, must be what you're supposed to be doing. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on my next guest. She has done so much. She has written so much, fiction, nonfiction. She's an herbalist. She's a homeopath. She's a... Well, we're going to talk about everything she's done, and... Hang on to your seats, because she's really a beautiful lady, and you're going to learn an awful lot today. So please welcome my guest, Ellen Everett Hotman. How are you today, Ellen?
I'm great. It's finally spring. I'm in Massachusetts, and all the daffodils are blooming, and the narcissuses. the little blue pulmonaria, the lungwort, is in full bloom, and we don't have violets yet, but spring is definitely here.
Well, I'm in South Carolina, so spring is come and gone. We're now entering summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but you know what? When you have any plants here, anything flowering, it's ever blooming. That's how they are. I have these little tiny pink roses along the side of my house, right by my porch. And, I mean, I'm always looking, and there's always buds. There's always flowers. So, you know, it's we do have a cool season, but certainly not like Massachusetts. But anyways, let's get to all that you've done. Tell me how, well, I guess I should tell about your book. Your latest book is Once Around the Sun, Stories, Crafts, and Recipes to Celebrate the Sacred Earth Year. Can you tell what she is already, everybody? Can you tell that she reminds me of Mother Earth. I don't know why. I don't know if that's a compliment for me. I believe that. You're like Mother Earth. You
Mother
touch,
Earth is a goddess. She's a goddess.
We're going to talk about that, too. Okay, so
she's one of
tell
my
me how
goddesses.
Did Ellen begin with all of this? I mean, now, just to get started with her, you practice a lot of stuff. You do... there's Celtic on your site. Now, I'm a novice. I don't know a thing about it. So, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that want to know, how did Ellen even step her foot into anything like this? Did you follow somebody else? Was it a calling? So take us back.
Boy, well, when I was a teenager, about age 16, I think, it was during the Vietnam War, which kind of dates me, but... I had this very strong instinct that I had to know how to survive. In other words, how to forage, how to find food out in the wilderness. I don't know. I just had this. And nobody around me was doing that. My parents weren't. It wasn't in my family. You know, there was nothing like that. But I just had this incredibly strong, you know, voice inside of me saying, you've got to know how to survive. So I immediately was interested in that. And then many years later, when I moved to New England, I had been living in Philadelphia for a long time. And in Philadelphia, like you, we had roses until December. And then there was a brief period of just a few months where there were no roses because it was snowy. But then the roses came back, I think, in March, something like that. And we were able to plant herbs and flowers in March and so on. So it was only really about 3 months where there wasn't fresh food around. And when I moved to New England, I was kind of shocked because we can't plant anything here until after Memorial Day. We can plant certain cold, hardy crops like kale, you know, or onions, things like that. But really, you're not supposed to plant flowers or anything till
right.
after Memorial Day. And then by the middle of September, you can get a frost. So that
yeah.
means
oh, yeah,
really,
I was in from Michigan originally, so I know all about it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you only have 3 or 4 months to have anything green out there. So I just couldn't understand how people survived here. It just really, I was
bizarre.
In college. Yeah, I was in college at the time. And I'm actually still living in the same house. It's amazing. I've been here over 30 years. But I live in the woods, and I was looking out the window one day, and I just, you know, I'm surrounded by trees, and I just thought, I wonder if it has something to do with the trees. Because, you know, conifers stay green all winter, right?
Yep.
So then I went to Barnes & Noble and other bookstores, and I was trying to find a book that would tell me how to eat trees, and I couldn't find anything. There was nothing. There were no tree herbals, you know, spiritual values of trees, nothing. So then, even though I was in graduate school at the time, and if you've been in graduate school, you know what that means. You're working 7 days a week, you know. And so I said, oh, my goodness, if there is no book, that means I have to write it. Which is really illogical because I was not an English major. I just had this voice that said, you're supposed to write it. So I wrote my first book while I was in graduate school, getting very good grades, by the way.
You did. I can hear it.
Yeah. Well, my first book was called Tree Medicine, Tree Magic, and it's
still
in print.
Well, it has to be about trees.
Yes, it's
yes.
still in print. And in fact, the second edition is out now, which has full color illustrations. It has recipes for every tree. I include a recipe, so you too can eat the trees. The first edition didn't have recipes, and it only had black and white illustrations. But now it has full color. But anyway, that's how it started, and I've been writing ever since. It's really crazy. I mean, I was working. Writing, and creating or running Druid orders for 30 years. I did that for 30 years. Now I just write full-time. That's what I do.
Well, okay. So explain about Druid. There's, like we talked earlier before we got on the air, there's a misconception about a lot of things. And I regard you as an authority. I really do. And so if you were to explain all of this, and folklore has been around forever. I mean, I'm in the South, so you know there are a lot of folklore down here, lots of it, in Tennessee, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, all of that. And that's exactly what it is. It's passed down by all the folks. And
a lot of the lore, especially in the Appalachian area, comes from Scotland and Ireland.
Yes.
That's where it comes from.
It's amazing.
Unless it's Native American. I mean, that's a whole other, you know, subject. But, yeah. Now, folklore is just the traditions that were passed down. And the Druids, they were very important people 2,000 years ago. We're not so important now. Back in the day, Druids were the advisors to the kings and queens, and they were the experts. They're called the people of arts. So they were the lawyers, the judges, historians, sacred singers, magicians, ritual leaders. You know, they were the educated elite of the Celtic tribes, basically. And what happened was, over time, by around the 5th century, they started to meld with the Christians who came in, when the missionaries showed up. And I actually have a trilogy of novels that I wrote because I was trying to understand that, why these Druids combined with the Christians, and they created a Celtic tradition called the Culdee, C-U-L-D-E-E, if you want to look it up. And it was a mystery to me because I couldn't understand why these, you know, nature-worshipping polytheists wanted to combine with these monotheistic types, right? And so the novels were my attempt to work that out. But I've actually, since I wrote the novels, and it's called the Druid Trilogy, you can find it on Amazon. It's three books. But I also found out fairly recently that in the 5th century, there was a plague, and that was something I never knew. There was not only massive climate change, there was really bad climate, so that the crops failed, which is, you know, bad enough. But then there was the Justinianic plague, and people were dying right and left. And what that meant was the Druids, who were the educated elite, had to go somewhere, because as a Druid, you were supported by the tribe. You know, Druids didn't have to earn money or, you know, cows in those days. They would have been paid in cows. But they, you know, they were literally supported by the king or the queen, and they performed a service, you know, in exchange for the king and the queen. They were the political advisors and the intellectuals of the tribe. But if the king was dead, or if half the people in the kingdom, there were all these little tiny kingdoms, half the people died in the plague, then what was a Druid supposed to do, you know? And,
and
the Christians had their communities set up, their monasteries, which were both male and female, by the way, men and women living together. The idea of celibacy and being just men or just women was much later. And that was a Roman idea. That was the Roman Christian idea or Roman Catholic idea. Celtic monastic communities were both men and women together, married, you know.
Right.
So that's where the Druids went. And they could have done that just to survive. That's what I think. Because the Christian clergy were educated people. And so the Druids, being educated people, said, oh, yeah, there's this other group of educated people, and they have these stories, you know, that they bring, these new stories about this guy called Jesus, and, you know, let's go over there, and maybe we can live there, and we can join forces and survive. And I think that could be what happened.
I bet it was.
Yeah,
because you have two different types of intelligence going, and you know, you and I think about it and say, well, hey, why don't we join forces? I mean, it's pretty stupid for us to be here, and we're floundering, and you're over there floundering. We might as well just be all together. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and they were very similar because they were educated people. They weren't like the peasants, you know. So anyway, that's just a theory. You know, there's no hard evidence, but the Chaldee was the religion that emerged when the Druids and the Christians got together. So they created a form of Celtic Christianity, which is very nature-centered. And it wasn't until the Council of Whitby, I think, in the 6th century, that all that came crashing down, because they had all these debates when the Roman Christians came in, and who's going to be in charge? Is it the Celtic Christians or the Roman Christians? And the Roman Christians won, and they continued, in my mind, you know how the Romans came into Europe, and they never really got to Ireland, and they never really got to the north of Scotland, which
exactly,
is why the Druids did survive. The missionaries kind of continued the work of the Roman armies, because the Roman armies came in and especially in France, you know, Gaul, they really killed, it was genocide, basically. They just killed people and enslaved them and all this stuff. And then when that was done, then the missionaries came in and they brought the Roman culture, which was very patriarchal, you know, and that, to me, I'm just telling you my opinion here. The Roman Church continued the work of the Roman armies. They did it on a spiritual level. So the Celtic Christian Church was kind of pushed back, but the Celtic Church is coming back, both in Scotland and Ireland. There are a lot of people. And then there are people who are not Christian at all, who are pagan, you know, but very nice people.
Okay.
You know, nice,
what's
friendly
a pagan
people.
For the people? What is a pagan?
A pagan is just a non-Judeo-Christian Islamic person, because the Judeo-Christian Islamic tradition is monotheist. And they say, you know, the Christians will say God, they have their God, and then the Muslims will say it's Allah, and the Jews will say Yahweh, and they'll insist that their God is the real God, you know, but it's only one. And if you're not following that one God, you know, you're a heretic or you're a non-believer,
right,
or there's something wrong with you. But a pagan honors all the gods and all the goddesses.
I like that.
And pagan includes even Hinduism, for example, because the Hindus are interesting. They're both polytheist and monotheist at the same time. And that's kind of the model that I follow, because I honor all the gods and goddesses, but I also recognize that they all come from source, from the same source. So I'm a monotheist and a polytheist, and I'm also a pantheist and an animist all at the same time.
You eist. You're just an eist.
I love it.
No, I just love it. You know, this is so informational, and that's what I want, because I was reading about you, and I was thinking, wow, there's a lot of stuff here. I mean, I've heard of it, but I don't really understand it, you know. I have a reader on my site who's from Ireland. And yeah, she participates in all the things that go on. Her gowns and her head. She just goes to all these festivals and participates, and that's what she is. And she reads runes, by the way. I've known her for 20-some years, and she would be interesting to have on the show, too, because you know, she could explain a lot of things firsthand that she does. You are the expert to me. You are. You know, that's it. If I had a question, you are my go-to. Absolutely. because I'm seeing what you've been writing about all these years, and I think you've covered just about everything in this latest book, the book that I have, Once Around the Sun. I mean, I've been briefing it while you're talking. I'm just kind of, I'm actually like a, I read different. I read, my eyes spread out when I read. I read very fast because I'm looking at, like, the whole thing almost at one time. I know it sounds kind of weird, but in a way I'm kind of weird. There's some things in here that answer the questions that I've had in my head. And this book, when did this come out? Did this just come out? Let me look and see here.
It just came out. First the official pub date was April 19th, but I think it was moved up to April 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, what is today? Is today the 26th?
Today's the 27th.
Oh, okay, so it came out yesterday officially, but it has been available on Amazon for, I think, a couple of weeks.
And I have it in my trusty little hands.
Yes.
I opened the page, and we're going to talk about this, about Beltane, because I know that's important, and it's important to my reader, too. I remember her writing about it, that it's an important day. And I'm sure you and her would really hit it off because of her living in Ireland, you know. But I open the book, and I see at the bottom it says Beltane Magic, Planting Seeds. I'm going to tell you something, Ellen. Anything that's got the word fairy tale magic in it piques my interest. It probably comes from another life, I guess. I don't know. But I believe. And at the end of my show, I say, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And people will say, where did that come from? I said, I have no idea, but that's from me. And so you can tell what I'm about. You know, okay, this lady, I mean, she's got this belief mechanism going on that anything is possible. Anything. And I could get into some really good arguments with people, but I don't because of who I am on the Internet and all that. But magic. Okay, so that's a you want to talk about your book first, and then we'll go to Beltane. I think we should do that. We should end with that, right?
Okay. Well, the book is called Once Around the Sun, as you said. It's actually designed to be a children's book, but I've been told by grown-ups that they keep it by their bed because it.
Oh no! I will have it at my table. I really will. I really, really will.
Yeah, grown-ups like it too because it makes them feel hopeful. It was written during the pandemic. I was writing it all during the pandemic, and it was, you know, especially during the really scary days in the beginning when we didn't have any vaccines and people were, you know, ambulances were screeching and people were packing the hospitals, and it was a very frightening time. And that's when I started writing it, and I think I was trying to give myself courage and hope. So the book is just filled with that. And I think there's an actual quote in there that even on the darkest night, the sun rises eventually. But anyway, it's all about hope. And it's the wheel of the year. And the wheel of the year it's like in the Christian church, it would be called the liturgical year. You know, Jesus is born at Christmas. He dies at Easter.
Yes, Easter.
And then I don't know what happens in between,
but
so every year he's always born at Christmas. Okay, so that's the wheel of the year. So we have a wheel of the year, and it follows the phases of nature. And like I can look out my window right now, and all the greenery is coming back, and the flowers are coming back, and that's the rebirth of nature. You know, and it's so interesting, the ancient Greeks, or the Greek Orthodox, Leison, he is risen, he is risen. So they visualize Jesus risen, we visualize the plants coming back, you know, the green.
Right. Yeah.
Same idea.
And it makes you feel wonderful. It makes you feel, because
it's
when
hopeful.
You're in the dark, I don't feel good, and you don't either. I mean, it's not, I love spring, I hate fall. I mean, to say hate, that's
a
strong
word. Oh, I
love
the fall. I love the
fall.
Well,
I was from Michigan, so we had beautiful color in the trees and all of that. But I love spring. We have a lot of, you know, and I'm in the right place. I don't even know why I was born in Michigan. we have a lot of birds and the wildlife, and it's just, I'll tell you a story after, but this is just, I'm going to really look through this book because you have recipes in here also.
Well, what I do is I give an original story for each of the holy days, our holy days throughout the year. I wrote the stories myself. They're all original. There's poetry in there also, all original. I wrote it all. And then I give a craft. And again, it's designed for children, but grown-ups like it too. For example, how to make a magic wand, or how to make
I want one.
Yeah, how to make a besom, which is how to make your own broom, you know, things like that. So every festival has a story, and they're designed to be read out loud. So and they're each from a different culture. So La Befana is from Italy. Bridget from Ireland, and I have a Polish story in there. I have an Anglo-Saxon story about Easter and the goddess Eostra or Istra, and her sacred rabbit, her bunny rabbit, which is how we got Easter rabbits and eggs. You know, she carries a basket of eggs, and that's from actual tradition. I didn't make any of that up. But so anyway, there's a story, and there's a pronunciation guide for each of the foreign words. So, for example, if a child was reading the story out loud and they got to a word that they had never heard before, they could pronounce it, but also a teacher or a parent could tell them, you know, oh, yes, that's Polish. What do you mean Polish? And then you get out a map and you show them where Poland is.
Oh, yes,
you know,
the history. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and then you talk about the history. So anyway, there's the story, then there's a craft, and then there's a recipe, and it's a traditional recipe from the culture that the story is from, so that when you celebrate the festival, you have the taste, the smell, the sound, the sight of, you know, the festival from tradition. And it's just a way of keeping these things alive. And, I mean, I personally don't have kids, but I used to be a teacher for many years. I was a junior high school teacher, but I've taught every grade from kindergarten through college. But I could just imagine teachers working with this, you know, because you take out the globe and you show them where the story comes from, you know. Anyway, that's what it is, basically.
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, you can turn to any page in this book, which is very rare, and you get some information that you can understand. It's not like, oh, well, I have to go further into this chapter because I don't get what's on this page. That's not true. And I see all your pronunciations and all what everything means, and I turn to the magical Beltane. It's called Beltane, right? Is that right? Journey.
Beltane, in Irish.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay. Now, how do you pronounce this, the fairies? Is it just
the she? The she. The Dina she.
This is right up my alley. Oh. Oh, gosh. We could talk for hours. Okay. So, what was your first book? Your first book was a series that you did?
No, the first book, what are you talking about, 30 years ago, or which first book?
Well, I mean, the Tree Medicine, Tree Magic.
Yeah, Tree Medicine, Tree Magic was the first book. And there were no other Tree Magic books at that time. All the other books about trees and magic of trees and tree alphabets and all that came afterwards. That was the first one.
Now, you also wrote about witches, right?
Yes, I have a called The Real Witches of New England, and that happened. That was an interesting thing. I went to a poetry reading at a local coffee house called the Deja Brew Coffee House.
Oh, that's
cute. And there was a poet reading a poem about Mary Wentworth, who was the Witch of Hadley, And I just happened to be working in Hadley at that time, and I had never heard of her, and I had no idea that there was a
local
witch.
Talk about divine order. Yeah.
So I walked up to him afterwards, and we sat at the bar, and I said, "Who is this Mary Wentworth?" And he told me her story, and I quote a large part of his poem in the beginning of the book, but the whole book came out of that night when I heard that poem. And she was quite an interesting character. She was, and oh boy, this is a big subject, but she was pretty typical of the women that were persecuted. She was older, she was poor, she was a widow. And in the colonies in New England, once you became a widow or poor, that meant that the church, the congregation, was responsible for you. Because she had no husband, so the church had to take care of her. And the people really resented that, you know, kind of like people who don't approve of food stamps or welfare.
Yeah. Isn't that something even back then? It existed.
So people really resented her. And so they told the story that every time they tried to go by her house in a cart or on a horse, that the animal would stop dead in front of her door and wouldn't go any further. And the only way that they could get the animal to move again was they had to go into her house and beat her up. And so they did. So these men would go into the house, beat her up, and then they'd come out, and then the horse would magically move. Okay, so they kept doing that, and because they were angry that they had to help her out. So at one point they said, well, let's send her to Boston because that's where the high court was. And they said, she must be a witch, so let's send her to Boston to be tried. So they sent her to Boston, and the judges in Boston, who were very educated people generally, they said, this is ridiculous. They said, there's nothing here. And they sent her back, which only made the people more angry. So then they decided that they were going to take matters into their own hands and hang her. So a gang came to her house, they grabbed her, they hung her by the neck on a tree, and they left her there. But guess what?
She didn't die.
She didn't die. And
I gotcha.
Yeah, so when they came to cut her down, she was perfectly alive.
That really scared him, I bet, didn't it?
Oh, they threw her in a snowbank and they took off, and they never harmed her again after that. And she's called Half Hanged Mary. That's her name.
Half Hanged Mary. I love it. I love that story.
Well,
God.
She lived.
That's amazing.
She lived
for
11 years after that.
Wow. You know. But it's interesting to find out how they behaved years ago, and they still did it, you know. And I always say it's got to do with your mother, your grandmother, your grandfather, way back. It goes way back. Whatever they did was passed down, and it doesn't mean it was right. A lot of people, they don't make the adjustments. They just they're wacky. They're just people boggle my mind sometimes. That's why I always try to make my shows informative, make people feel good about themselves, be happy, and to see that there are other things out there. It's just not black and white. You think it is, but it's really not. It's in color, people. It's in color. And you know, but you're so knowledgeable. You're amazing. You really are.
Well,
you are Mother Earth.
It's just a question of curiosity, you know. To write a book, you have to be curious enough about something that the curiosity will last for 2 years. Because usually, now it takes me about a year to write a book because I'm doing this full time, but it used to take me 2 years. But I had to stay interested for 2 years. So, I would just grab onto these ideas, you know, and try to figure them out. Like, I didn't really know the history of the witch persecutions, you know. So the first part of the book, The Real Witches of New England, I go through the whole timeline of what happened in Europe, And then I go into Salem, you know, but most people are aware of what happened in Salem, or a lot
right.
of people are. So I spend most of the time, I talk about Europe. And then the people in Salem, all they were doing was continuing, like you just said, the same mentality that they brought with them from
right.
Europe.
Exactly.
But you know what, the interesting thing is, after they hung all the so-called witches, because they were just accused witches, in Salem, who they were all good Christians, right? They were just hung. Then they were so ashamed of themselves. That's the good part, because unlike in Europe, where where it went on for centuries, they became so ashamed of themselves that they never did it again. They were really embarrassed, and they paid restitution to the families, and you know, they felt really bad about it. But they did kill 19 people. But anyway, so after that, then I interview descendants of the Salem witches. And, well, that's another
awesome.
Thing. Excuse me. I had no idea. I thought it was going to be really hard to find descendants, right? But once I started on track, and I did it by looking people up on the internet, believe it or not, I found out that there's thousands and thousands of them, at least here in New England. And so it was actually pretty easy finding descendants. And so I have interviews with descendants, and they talk about their ancestor and how they felt about it. And then the third part of the book, I talk to modern witches. And I ask them, you know, how they practice, how they became a witch, what they believe. And these are all people that are alive today and, you know, practicing.
Now, there is a difference between, I mean, white witch and then the other kind. Is that true? There is a difference in their practice?
Oh, it depends who you talk to.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll get, I have a gal that does my blog. She does a thorough job, really. And, you know, she'll say, well, what do you want to know about? Well, because, you know, just go to Google and ask. But, she'll explain to me. She says, well, you know, there's the black witch and the white witch, and she said they're really not evil. And sometimes she'll say, well, what do you want me to write about? And I said, well, I always want it to be in good taste, and it doesn't express my opinion. It's factual, so you have to give facts. And of course, she always gives attribution for anything that she gets, wherever she gets it, and you know, we're all good with that. But I find
it
fascinating.
You know what? A real practicing witch would never say white witch or black witch. They would never say that because
that's good to know.
Too binary.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
A person who's really practicing the craft, you know, they regard it as a craft. So it's a skill. That's why throughout history there were witches, there were real witches, and there still are, but all through European history there were witches, but they were also Christians. So they were people who went
yeah.
to church, you know, with everybody else, but they knew the craft. And so the craft is just a skill. So it's very difficult to say whether something is white witchcraft or black witchcraft because
right.
suppose you're a very good person and you need to protect yourself or you need to protect somebody else. So then you hang some herbs or do a spell is just a spoken rhyme, you know, but you hang nettles on your gatepost to repel evil, right? So does that make
you
a black
witch? No, I don't know. I don't do any of that.
No, but I mean, if you're
But I do believe it. I do. And it's because that's the word, believe. You know, I think you
right,
have to believe
what you're
doing.
Right, but if you're a perfectly innocent person and you're just protecting yourself or you're protecting your family
right.
or your
Nothing
community.
Wrong with that.
Right. Does that make you a black witch if you're doing
nope.
something to protect yourself?
No,
so, I mean,
no.
It's too simplistic to say black witchcraft, white witchcraft. That's, you know. But, I mean, I think in the popular imagination, a white witch is a healer, and a black witch is supposed to be somebody who does bad stuff. But a
which
real
is
witch.
Not true.
Right.
Yeah,
a real
it's
witch
not,
can do
that's
all
That's good.
Of
I'm glad you explained that for the listeners. I'm really glad. Well, they need to know. You know, people, like I said, people have misconceptions about all of this. The druids, the fairies, the forest, all of it. You know, and if they go to your site, and I want to mention it, it's Ellen Everett Hopman, ellenevertthopman.com. If you go there, she's got a list of news and druid news and fairy news and herb news and magical news and all of these things. I mean, I find it fascinating, and I'm going to spend a little time after we're done. I'm going to go looking at all of this, and I'm going to subscribe because I've never met anyone like you before. I've had hundreds of interviews. I've never had anybody like you on my show, and that's why I was so grateful to Gail.
Well, that's
because
surprising
said, well,
because there's a lot of us out there.
Well,
we
maybe they'll get rid of this and I'll get more. But you see, most of my talks, I like to call them talks, it's not really an interview, come from the publicist. Sometimes I'll get an author to say, you know, I just did a book and I would love if you would interview me. I've heard your shows, blah, blah, and then I'll do that. But most of the time it's from a publicist. And I've got them all over the world. But, I really kind of wait for that. But I really think I've got the creme de la creme with you because I just think you are very knowledgeable. And I believe also in divine order. I believe things come to us when they are supposed to, and our interaction is because it's supposed to. And Beltane is coming up, and it's supposed to. And your book just came out.
We haven't talked about Beltane yet.
No, but I think we should.
Yes.
Let's talk about that. What? That's May 1st,
okay,
correct?
Okay, so Beltane is
May. Go ahead,
May
you
Day.
Take it. You're the expert on all this. I'm just going to – I'll ask you questions.
Okay, so Beltane is May Day, and for the ancient Celts, they only had two seasons, summer and winter. And summer began at Beltane, and winter began at Samhain, which is Halloween. Halloween is an ancient Celtic festival. Our culture still celebrates Halloween. We still remember it. We do not usually celebrate May Day, and we used to. When I was a little girl in kindergarten and first grade, we made May baskets.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yes,
yeah.
Me too.
But they put a stop to that because
why?
The Russians, bless their hearts, have this lovely May Day parade. And so do the Chinese, I believe. So during the McCarthy era and the Cold War, they said, can't have May Day. So that was all canceled. But that's coming back. These things are coming back. I'm going to two May Day celebrations this weekend just in my area. And they're happening all over the place, you know. So in England, you would have a maypole. That's English or British, more properly.
What's
in Ireland,
for?
You have a
it's
May bush.
It's just a decoration?
The maypole is something you dance around.
I was going to say that, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and it has ribbons, you know, and you grab a ribbon and everybody dances. That's British. For the Irish, it's a May bush. And so you have a little tree, typically a hawthorn, which you decorate with ribbons and these days, in modern times, they put different colored ribbons and plastic eggs and things all over it. But back in the day, in the olden times, it was yellow. You had yellow flowers like primroses and marsh marigold, you know, things that are yellow. And eggshells dyed yellow. And that was to honor the sun because you're beginning the light half of the year. And that's in the book. I talk about all this in the book. But anyway, so May Day is incredibly important. You know how we still remember at Halloween how there's ghosts running around. That's because the walls between the worlds are very thin at that time because the seasons are changing from the light half to the dark half at Halloween. And that means that there's chaos going on and disruption and change. And that makes the walls between the worlds come down so the ancestors and the fairies and the ghosts and all the spirits can come through more easily, and we can also communicate with them more easily. So our culture sort of still remembers that part. But what we've forgotten is that May Day was exactly the same. So it's a time of chaos again and change because you're moving from the dark half to the light half of the year. You can more easily contact the ancestors and the fairies. They can more easily contact you. And traditionally, if you wanted to see the fairies, what you did was you found a blooming tree, like a blooming elder or a blooming hawthorn or a blooming apple, you know, whatever's blooming, and you slept under it to see the fairies.
Oh.
But there's also a very important cow ritual associated with both Beltane and Samhain or Halloween. And this is true of, I mean, animals everywhere do this. For example, if you go to Yosemite, you know, to a park, the buffalo at Beltane, they start moving up the hills. I'm sure they've probably started already, but they start moving back up to their summer pasture, and then at Samhain mm-hmm. they come back down, right? So in Ireland and other Celtic areas, Beltane was the time when the cows were sent up to the hills, and Samhain or Halloween is when they're brought back down to the farm to spend the winter. But the way that you knew that it was Beltane was when the hawthorn blooms. So it's not Beltane
oh.
until the hawthorn blooms. And the blooming hawthorn tells you that it's warm enough to send the cows to the hills. So for a druid, yeah, it's really important. I mean, I think every druid needs to have a hawthorn tree somewhere on their property, you know, so that you can tell. That was the job of the druid, was to announce to the tribe, hey, the hawthorns are blooming. It's time to send the cows up to the hills.
Right, yeah.
And then they had this ritual that they did where they had two fires, and the two fires had to be close enough that a white cow passed through them would have her fur singed brown. So that's pretty hot. And every cow had to pass between those two fires. And that was a ritual form of purification, which is a big subject, but this is part of the Indo-European tradition. The cow, which is a lunar animal, which carries liquid or soma, what in the Vedic tradition would be called soma, which is sacred liquid, which is milk. So it's a lunar, milky, watery animal, and you pass it between two fires. So you bring fire and water together. Those are the two basic building blocks of creation in Indo-European thinking. And that's, you know, that's a spiritual act before you send the cows up. And then at Lunasa, which is August, end of July, beginning of August, when the first grain is ready, they do the same kind of ritual, but opposite. They take horses, which are solar animals of fire, and they drive them through water. So again, you have fire and water coming together. And
yeah.
The idea was that when fire and water come together, you have the greatest potential for magic and transformation and so on. Does that make sense?
No, it does to me. Because I do know something. I'm just not the expert. I would consider myself to be a novice, meaning I'm still in the phase of learning, and I don't, you know, I listen.
We all are.
I love to learn. Yes, yeah. I love to learn. You know, I learned bookkeeping. I learned computers. You know, somebody mm-hmm. said to me, oh, I need you to help me with my computer. I said, well, just go Google it. No, I need you to help me because you know. You can do anything. That's what they tell me, Ellen. You can do anything. My granddaughter tells me that. Oh, anything? I can't swim and I can't skate, okay? I can. Everything else I could probably stab at. I could probably, I don't know, fake it or something. I don't know. But I've just, it's funny how our life changes. When I was a little girl, I was so quiet. And then I've grown into what I am now, and I'm so open to so many things. I was raised a Roman Catholic. I was baptized a Greek Catholic. But,
well,
I always say
the Catholics make the best pagans.
Really? Oh,
yes.
Because of their because of their spirituality and because of their belief system. But actually,
the Catholic Church, they kept the goddess. They kept Mary, who is the goddess.
Yes, yes.
The Protestant
Absolutely.
Church got rid of the female altogether.
Yep, you're right. Yeah, Mother Mary. Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
And Catholics know about incense and candles and music.
Yes.
That's all the stuff that pagans like.
and the water to bless yourself with.
Yes, exactly.
You know, I'm thinking
That's
about
magic.
My
That's
days.
Magical
yes.
water, right? Magical
yes,
water,
is.
Magical wafers, magical
yes,
wine.
Yes, the wafers, the wine, it was all. If it was blessed, it was special. It was top drawer. It was as if you
magic.
Had, if, yes, as if you had Jesus right before you. I always felt I was born during his time. I've always felt that. He's come to me a few times and probably saved my life quite a few times, as a matter of fact.
You know
fact.
Who
but,
came to me? This is the weirdest thing. The Dalai Lama.
Really?
He came to me and he spoke to me,
Awesome. Everybody respects that person.
Apparently
that
I'm a devotee of the Dalai Lama when I'm asleep.
Well, you're Mother Earth to me, meaning you know so much about where we came from. You know so much about people, all kinds of walks of life. That's a very special name to me, and I'm giving you that. That's what you are, Mother Earth. So if I send you an email, hey, Mother Earth, what's up to? You'll know. Oh, my God, it's that Natalie. She's so crazy. I'm not really crazy. You've also done videos, right?
Yes. Quite on soon. My website, I have some CDs. Are they DVDs? I don't know what they are. DVDs? What are they?
DVDs, yes. DVDs. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Those were done when I was a wee bit younger. They're still perfectly good. The information's really good, but I'm older than that now. But, yeah, there's some herbal ones. There's a nice, for people listening to this, there's one that's very complimentary to what we've been talking about. It's called Pagans, the Wheel of the Year. And I specifically created that to be appropriate for schools and libraries, for people to show to groups. And it goes through the festivals, just like the book Once Around the Sun. And it has original music, poetry, and it shows us doing ceremonies throughout the year in costume, full drag, and it's all filmed here in New England. The landscape is gorgeous. So if you're interested, and I mean, people who
I'm on your site. I've already subscribed. Look out!
Okay.
She's going to be obtaining so much knowledge; it's going to drive everybody nuts. Yes. Your blog, your subscription, your blog, the features, and you have on your site that if they purchase a book through your site, no, you can't because you're not a secured site, right? Are you? Yeah, you're locked. Okay.
No, it takes you to PayPal. My site takes you to PayPal, so you
That's
shouldn't
cool.
worry.
Everybody
if you go to
loves
my site,
PayPal.
Yeah, it says not secure up at the top. That's because they want you to pay $100 to make it say it's secure.
Well, yeah, I have that on all three of my sites.
Yeah, you're not buying the books from me. What happens is it takes you right to PayPal, and you know PayPal is very secure, right?
Oh, yeah.
Money
I've
back.
I've been with
guarantee.
Them 16 years. Oh, yes, I
right.
know.
So
I know.
That's
they know me
go.
Well.
It takes you to PayPal. So no worries.
Now, it says here that they can get an autographed copy if they buy it through your site. Is that true?
Yes, because PayPal notifies me that you've paid for it, and then
okay.
I mail it. So you
awesome.
Get you get a signed copy. You get a personal note. Yeah.
What else do you do?
What else do you do?
I could
right
have you
now,
on for three shows.
I'm,
three
I'm
shows
writing,
I could have you on for.
I write full-time now, but I'm also still running a Druid order. It's called Tribe of the Oak, and if you're interested in that, it's tribeoftheoak.com. We're currently looking for a new Archdruid. I've been Archdruid there for 7 years, and I think I might have a candidate in mind. But, yeah, you can go there, and we have a basic book list there. So if you're interested in Druidism.
You've got everything. Everything that anybody wants to know about is on your site. The links are there.
If you're interested in Celtic history, go to the tribeoftheoak.com.
Tribe of the Oak?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I see it. Here it is. It's
Tuhanadara.
It's on your site.
Right.
Oh, I find everything. I'm you know, when I had to create three sites and had somebody, and Tony does it for me, and I mean, I find, well, no, this doesn't sound right. No, this, and I've had Jackie, my gal, do it because she's just so good. As a matter of fact, I think she did a review of your book, if I'm not mistaken. Let me see here. Then you can see it. I think she did it last month. She loves this stuff.
Where did she review it?
How did she review it? She got a wait a minute. She got a PDF. Where? MysticLivingToday.com. Did she do it?
Have to write that down.
Yeah, that's my...
Facing North just did one. Okay,
MysticLivingToday.com. .com.
Okay.
Yes, now she hasn't done it. Maybe she's doing it this month. I'll make sure she does a review because I like... You know, when I have people on my show, they'll say, well, who is this person? I mean, you know, and then they get a little something more, you know, like most of the people that have been in my magazine have been on my show. And I really love it because then I have a connection with them and it's nice. It's just, I want everybody to know about you. It's not about me, it's about you. And I want them to know that there's a person like you out there, because otherwise they may not know. And Candy, the gal that does all the marketing and everything, she puts it out. Oh, I mean, you're everywhere, everywhere. And then I'll put this on Twitter, the whole thing, the recording. I'll also send it to you, because I don't have your email address, but I guess I could get it off the site. But I can send it to Gail, and Gail will send it to you. And you'll have a copy of it. And... I have to have you on again because I can tell there's just, I have more questions and I'm thinking, oh my God, it's almost an hour. Where'd it go?
Yep.
See?
Just a few minutes left.
So now what will you do at the two festivals that you're going to go to? Will you, on May 1st, what is it? Do you participate? Do you talk? Is it just people walking around? What is it?
Well, back, you know, for 30 years, I was running things, and thank goodness I don't do that anymore. I used to have people come to my house, and we would do a ceremony out in the woods and all that stuff. But what I'm going to be doing, both of these places have maypoles.
They're doing it
English style. So I'm making a gorgeous cake, which is gluten-free, vanilla cake with cream cheese icing, fresh strawberries.
Oh, my God, I want some.
So I'm making that, and I'm bringing wine.
Of course.
So they're both two different places in the area, but they both will have maple ceremonies. And, yeah, so we'll dance around the maypole, then we eat a lot of food. And it's not, I mean, we're finally able after, it's been 2 or 3 years now since we've been able to do
this. Right, to be together, exactly, yes.
Yeah, so.
There is an excerpt of your book in my issue that was done by Jackie, the current issue.
Okay.
So if you go to MysticLivingToday.com and click on current issue, you'll see. It's under book excerpts. There you are.
Okay.
It's there.
Thank you.
It's there. Oh, yes. Oh. I love it. But see, it was just before you were going to come on the show. Now I'm going to go back to her and make sure she has something wonderful about Beltane. I'm sure she will because, see, she's really into this. She loves all of this. And she said, you're so lucky. You get to talk to her. And I said, well, you know, you can call in. You can ask her a question. There's no problem with that. Now,
I just want to mention one other book in connection with Beltane. It's called The Sacred Herbs of Spring.
Okay.
And it's herbs to celebrate Beltane. But that has spring herbs and early summer herbs. It also has recipes. Every single herb that I mention, I talk about the medicinal properties, and then I talk about the magical properties, and then I give a recipe, so how to cook with it. And then I talk in depth about Beltane, about the ancient Celtic festival of Beltane and how it was done, you know, how to do the ritual fire, how to, you know, there's a whole technique for building a fire correctly and things like that. But it's called the Sacred Herbs of Spring. It's also from Inner Traditions. And then there's the Sacred Herbs of Samhain, S-A-M-H-A-I-N, pronounced Samhain, Sacred Herbs of Samhain, which is the fall herbs, which is mostly roots and barks and berries, you know, that happen in the fall. But for spring, the Sacred Herbs of Spring, I highly recommend that book if you want to be seasonal, you know.
Right. Oh, I'm going to be. Now, how long have you been with Gail?
I believe she just started with Inner Traditions. I don't think she's been around that.
It's not been a month. It's been longer than that because I get a lot of stuff from her.
Yeah, just a few months.
I'm going to see what book she can send me because she sent me this one right away. We had this little conversation back and forth. Oh, you love this. Oh, come on. Now, you knew I would. Tell me something. I have a question. Another question from me to you is, why did you want to be on my show? Just because she told you or asked you?
Pretty much.
Okay. Because no, I'd like to find out. Interesting.
I had never heard your show before, but I was perfectly happy to be on it.
And I'm so glad. I'm so glad. Well, I've had people, authors, say, "Well, I've been listening to your podcast." You have, you know, yes. And I'm an author, and I want to be on your. I want to talk to you, and so it makes me feel really good. But I'm so honored to have you.
Well,
I'm going to have you again.
I never listen to podcasts. I just don't have time. You know.
I don't either. I just do them. That's all I do. I mean, you know,
yeah.
I'm doing a magazine, and then I'm running this other site, and then, you know, I'm working with my granddaughter for the illustrations, and I just do a lot. And then I have to help people that work for me with their computers, because tell me what to do. Tell me what to – remotely view, so I'll have to go and do a remote and help them. But you know what? I learned from my webmaster. I learned bookkeeping from a young man that lived across the street from me who became a CPA, and now he's a partner in the firm. He taught me bookkeeping. And so you have to – he told me then, and this is probably true, you've probably heard this, you have to want to learn it. If you show an interest, you're going to do really well, and I do really well. So, you know what I wish, though, and I'm sure you understand, I wish I was doing so much more of this many years ago, and I wasn't. My life was kind of suppressed. I was not able to become my own person, so to speak, either as a little girl or as a grown woman, and now I'm just doing it all.
Well, that's called self-actualization. It's a struggle for a lot of people because you have to overcome the tapes that were put in your head by your family, by the church, by your school, by your society.
Yes.
And for some reason, I did that pretty young. I mean, it was, I was pretty young when that happened.
Yeah, it was... And it wasn't until my husband passed a few years after that I realized what I could do.
Right.
I didn't know how intelligent. I didn't know how intelligent I was. I didn't know. But I know now, and nothing really stops me. I'm just like I'm not ruthless. I'm fearless. Somebody sent me two charms, this lady that does them. One was fearless and one was believe. She says, "That's you to a T." And I said, "Okay, I'll take it. That's me." But you're wonderful. You're just so wonderful, Ellen. And please say you'll come on my show again. Maybe, I don't know, maybe in the fall or something.
Halloween, Samhain would be a good time, probably.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have an awesome day. Thank you, thank you, thank you again for explaining
all
of this.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, you're wonderful. My Mother Earth. I have a Mother Earth. And I love her. Thank you. Okay, everybody. Now, next week, another guest. I don't even know. I have to flip the month in my trusty little book who I have, because it's going to be May, and it won't be until May 4th, okay? But anyways, please go to her site, EllenEvertHopman.com, and look at it, subscribe. And if you've ever been interested in all of this, Druids and Celtic and fairies and all of that, go to her site. You're going to be overwhelmed. You won't believe what's there. It's wonderful. It's just wonderful. And I was lucky to have her. Lucky to have her on my show, and I'll have her again, like she said, maybe just before Halloween or something. Well, if so long as you're not really busy, we'll have her. But anyways, as always, I end the show the same way. Believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. Everybody have a great day. Be safe. Be kind. And love people. And you know what? It is a beautiful world if you look outside. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye. Bye, Ellen.